pendant, and yours. CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, British Columbia.
Music and talk radio about all things, all genders. This is Intravenous, live on CJSF 90.1 FM, discussing and approaching contemporary gender issues through a feminist lens. Our goal is to educate, engage, and challenge the dominant hegemon. This episode is produced in partnership with West Coast Women in Engineering, Science, and Technology.
This is the Best of the West, inspiring women with real stories, hosted by West Coast Women in Engineering, Science, and Technology.
Hello and welcome to the Best of the West, UConn edition. I'm your host, Allison, and today we're talking to Leslie Leong. Leslie is a civil engineer and visual artist living and working in Whitehorse, Yukon. She makes art in many forms, often with a technical focus and an emphasis on three-dimensional work. Her work also often involves a functional aspect, and non-traditional materials and techniques are common in her work. Leslie's engineering degree and experience has enabled her to do all of the wonderful and unusual things she has done and continues to do. She has always been interested in encouraging women in engineering and previously belonged to the Division for the Advancement of Women in Engineering and Geosciences at Engineers and Geoscientists BC. Welcome, Leslie. Thanks
Hi.
For being here.
Thanks for having me.
So your background is in engineering and now you're an artist. What role has engineering had in your art career?
Well, most of my work seems to have a technical focus. So I've been creating these mixed media pieces that use computer boards in these landscapes. And also I like to use recycled materials. And so I kind of feel like every time I decide to use a different material in a different way that I don't see, you know, other people doing that, it's almost like a materials engineering exercise, you know, trying to figure out ways of fixing them together or whatever I do with them. And so that it goes into all sorts of different mediums as well, not just mixed media, even my jewelry that, I've been working on lately.
Yeah, you're putting your mechanics of deformable solids education to good use.
That's for sure. Actually, and I've been exploring, it's been quite fun, electroplating and electroforming, and then also apparently titanium metal. If you run a current through it, depending on the current, you know, it creates different colors on the surface of the titanium. So, yeah, I think that probably if I might not take these things on if I didn't have a certain amount of base knowledge. But yeah.
Your art certainly is distinctive. Yeah, I can definitely see that. What was your engineering university experience like?
It was a lot of work, as it is for all of us, I'm sure. But it was actually really good. Like, I think for us, in my year, apparently we had a high year of women in our classes. So it was like 15%, which I guess has changed a lot now. But actually, it was a really good experience. It was, you know, there was no issues. And there's a lot of good teamwork. And I gave me, as did everybody else, like a really well-rounded training in lots of different areas. And I think that's a huge value of, the engineering programs.
Mm-hmm, great. What school did you go to?
UBC.
Okay. Yeah. Were you from around there?
Yeah. I lived outside of Vancouver and Mission, down in the Fraser Valley.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
And then when you graduated university, what did you do?
Well, I was quite lucky. I was in the co-op program in university. And actually when I graduated, it was actually quite difficult to find jobs. Like a lot of my classmates, you know, they didn't get jobs in engineering because, the economy and the cyclical construction industry. Yeah, it was just in a downturn. So a lot of people didn't get jobs. But I was lucky because I'd been in the co-op program and I was working for Transport Canada doing project management at airports in BC the summer before. And so they took me back. I was so lucky.
Yeah, co-op programs are the best.
Yes, totally.
Okay, so you started working as an engineer.
Yeah. Yeah, doing management at projects in the airports. And they started me off small, and I was an engineer in training, really. So,
So when did the big transition to art happen?
Not till I went to the Northwest Territories, actually. So I worked in Vancouver with airports for, I can't remember how many years, but long enough to get my professional registration. And some things happened. I think it's better in the industry now, but I kind of got a little bit discouraged. But then I went north because I saw, because I was interested in the North, for one, but I saw this job posting for this parks job. And so I know it sounds like it's not engineering, but they were building things in the parks. So I thought, well, I use parks, you know, all the time. So I'm a user, so I know that end, and I can manage capital projects. So I made my pitch for that, and I ended up in Fort Smith in the Northwest Territories. So
wow, that's a big jump. How did you like it?
Yeah, it was really good, actually, at the time. So that was the middle piece between that and art. And and it brought me north, and I really like the North. So I like the culture, and it's a different, it feels different anyways than the cities. You know, we live in a city now, but it's not the same.
Definitely not. No, it's a special place.
Yeah.
So when did you really start creating art? Was it when you were working at Parks Canada?
So I had, it was Territorial Parks with the Northwest Territories. So we're building things in the park. And as a hobby, I did photography. So I kind of like just slowly transitioned to that in the Northwest Territories in Fort Smith. I, did that on the side. And then at some point I went, you know what? This is more fun. So the transition wasn't, it was more of a arts thing than an engineering thing. But I think the engineering stuff or that perspective creeped in later on. So
probably helped paying off the student loans too.
Yes, exactly. Well, actually, totally true, because it sets you up, right, for being able to do whatever you want to do. Mm-hmm. So I'd saved lots of, I was good at saving, and it enabled me to make a transition without too much financial burden. So
That's great. What has been one of the most memorable moments from your career?
That's tough.
There have been so many memorable moments.
Yeah, there actually have. I guess it depends if it's more recent. Maybe I can give you one that was kind of a bit of a pushed me into a different direction, that one. And then one more recent one. So when I was leaving Fort Smith, my husband had a computer that nobody wanted. And so my son, he was about 6 at that time, my oldest son. And I thought, wow, you know, if nobody wants it, then we should open it up, take it apart, and have a look. And so we did. I saw these beautiful gold contacts on a video card. And I thought, wow, that would make a really cool piece of jewelry. And I think that was the piece that brought my technical side in, and I felt more comfortable with that than sort of the stuff I had been doing before. Yeah. So I think that was sort of a turning point for me. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It was kind of interesting. Yeah. So I wore this necklace all the time. Well, not all the time, but whenever I did, people would say, oh, wow, that's so cool. You should make those. And I didn't for about 5 years, but then I finally started making them. So yeah, it was kind of fun.
Great.
Yeah.
And what was the more recent memorable moment?
So the more recent, more of a trip. So I went on a artist residency to Svalbard, Norway. So that's up near, well, actually we did cross the 80th parallel. And it was designed to bring artists together, and they had hoped that there would be more of a science side to it too, but unfortunately, I don't know why they didn't have people. But anyways, there was some discussion about that. But yeah, to look at what's happening up there and to, you know, explore the impacts of climate change. So on one hand, it's, you know, we're really lucky because we got to go way far north, which apparently is quite unusual. Only one of the guides had ever been there before. The other guides hadn't even been there. So that's because of the lack of sea ice. And so that's also depressing, right? So it was really, it's on my mind. Like I kind of came back with climate change depression. I didn't know it was a thing until I came back and went, what is going on? Why do I talk about this trip? And it spirals down into a depressing conversation. But yeah, and I have photographs, these great photographs of polar bears. And there's one pair that there's a mother and a cub, and they're pretty skinny. And so I sent that to Ian Sterling, the polar bear researcher in Alberta. He's quite well known. And yeah, he said, you know, they're using up their fat reserves because they're not getting enough to eat, and there's no sea ice for them to hunt from. And yeah, so it's kind of, so, I mean, it was awesome trip, and it was fantastic. Like, you know, walruses and calving glaciers and polar bears, and like, it was just phenomenal. But at the same time, it's this mixed emotion, because you know that the reason why you're able to see those things is because the planet is not in a good place. Yeah.
Were you able to channel those feelings either into your work?
So that's coming. So I've been out at the Ted Harrison retreat, and actually two of the artists did this really neat thing. They laid emergency blankets in the crack of a glacier. And so you know how the newer ones are gold on one side. And so it's like that Japanese philosophy of golden repair, the kintsukuri, where you embrace the flaws and the defects in whatever it is and move forward and create something new and beautiful. And so that's what I think we need to do. And so that's, for me anyways, that helped me to get out of that funk that I was in with, yeah, feeling depressed about it all, because that's not going to help anybody or anything. So yeah, so that's now, this golden thing is showing up in my work, my art practice. So yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Did you have any mentors throughout your education or your career?
I mean, in terms of project management, I did at work. I don't know that I did have good mentors. And I guess that's representative of the lack of women, I think, in engineering at the time. Not that they have to be women, but yeah, I mean, the other engineers at work, they were all men, which is fine. And they were great to me, and they were really helpful. But I did feel a little bit isolated, actually. Yeah.
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 Yeah, and I think it highlights the importance of things like this podcast and yeah, like the events we have for women in STEM.
Totally.
The community.
Yeah. Yeah. I think mentorship is important. And I might have, you know, had a different path if I had some kind of mentorship, because I felt, yeah, quite yeah, sort of alone. And I think that's why I left, actually. That's probably what, you know, pushed me to look elsewhere. Not that it was a bad thing. It just was. Yeah.
And now you're making yourself available to be a mentor.
Yes, so exactly. Yeah, yeah. I would like to do that. Yeah.
What is your favorite thing about civil engineering?
The way that you get trained at university is I think you tend to look at things and you're able to problem solve and you're inquisitive and it just gives you a whole different perspective on everything. Like, not just the planet, not just life, whatever it is. It just gives you a different perspective and it enables you to problem solve, and not even just problem solve. So you don't have to have a problem, but you actually seek them out. Yeah. And in an exciting way. Like, it's fun to find problems to solve. Yeah.
Yeah. I definitely can understand that feeling. Yeah. I think engineering is a way of thinking as much as anything.
Totally. Yeah. Totally.
So there's a bit of a debate going on. I'm not really sure if you could call it a debate, but the STEM versus STEAM. And for listeners who don't, might not know, STEM stands for science, technology, engineering, and math, whereas STEAM stands for science, technology, engineering, arts, and math. So a lot of people are talking about STEM now.
Yeah.
Maybe Leslie didn't know. A lot of people are talking about STEM now and promoting STEM, and often people refer to STEAM as well, wanting to add in the arts. So, not knowing very much about this little debate, I guess. What do you think? Do you think it's worth having the distinction between STEM and arts? Or would you like to see it referred to as STEAM?
That's a good question. I don't know. I think that overall, maybe there shouldn't be as much distinction. Not distinction's okay, but there shouldn't be so much separation in our workings between, you know, arts and the science-based. Because I think they can help each other a lot. And I think sometimes with the STEM group of whatever industry or people, the communication of what you're doing and what it's for and things may not access the public as well. And I think that the arts, including fine arts actually, can do that to connect with people on more of an emotional level, not just on the rational on the rational level. Like, I think that we have rational arguments and we can rationalize things and we're a rational society. But really, to access people to make change, you're much better to actually access them on an emotional level. Yeah. So I guess, yeah, in thinking that way, that maybe it is better to have more interconnectedness. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's great thoughts. Yeah. It is really important to be able to communicate our work with the public and the importance of it.
Yeah.
And the excitement.
Yes,
of it.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Great. What do you enjoy most about creating art? Do you enjoy the communication aspect of it, or?
I do enjoy that. I think, though, the most exciting part for me is creating something and figuring out ways to, you know, achieve a certain goal or to achieve a certain way of putting things together. Or I love that problem solving piece. And I'm sure that that's the engineering side of me that's in there. I'm totally sure that that's where that comes from. And the communication side, or I can't remember what you actually referred to, but you made me think of, you know, how we present things, and the exhibits are great, but yeah, it's just the work before that is the most exciting. Of course, we do like to access you know, people's thoughts and have them think in a certain way. And so that is satisfying for sure, but it's not the most exciting.
Mm-hmm. What kind of problems do you have to solve with your art?
So I don't really work like most artists. I don't work in a single medium and represent what I see. I tend to take an issue and create artwork around that issue. And I'll do whatever kind of artwork I need to, that I feel I want to create that. And so the problem solving comes from just that, because I need to figure out, you know, ways of doing things that might be unorthodox, because I use recycled materials often, or not just recycled, but different materials. Yeah, so that's kind of where that plays a role.
Mm-hmm. So for listeners who might not be artistically inclined like me, could you walk us through an example of something that you see and want to turn it into art?
Okay, so I have some plexiglass that came out of our house renovation. We renovated a house and I did a lot of the work myself. And so I would see all these materials that I could use. And so there's this plexiglass sunroom that was really run down. And so I kept it all because I thought, wow, I can do something with that. So I haven't actually done it yet, but I have this idea of creating like a representation of ice out of plexiglass. So, you know, I don't even know how I'm going to do that yet. So this is the problem solving, but you know, I might want to heat it so that it slumps into shapes or something, or I might want to cut holes in it and say mount caribou antlers somehow embedded in it, or use the plexiglass as planes in a larger cube or box. So yeah, so it's, you know, like, how am I going to do that? I don't know yet.
Great. I love the recycling aspect too.
Yeah, it's important for me. Sometimes I do programs in the schools, and the only time I'll do programs is if I can get them to use recycled materials, because that's, you know, we need to have a circular economy, really, like an ecosystem. We need to behave more like that. So mm-hmm. That's one way to access kids.
Yeah. What kind of activities do you do in the schools?
So every year, because we have the Swan Haven thing happening and all the swans come, so we take a milk jug, and I just designed a little way to take one milk jug and make one, use all the pieces except for the lid to make one swan. And so we'll make a whole flock of swans, you know, coming north. So that's an example.
Oh, but beautiful.
Yeah, it's really fun. Yeah. Actually, even the adults love it. Sometimes I did one that was on Canada Day, the 150 anniversary in shipyards. The adults were doing them. It's quite funny.
I'm curious how you do that. Maybe you could post an instructable.
Yes, I could.
Awesome. So you say you work with a lot of different mediums and materials. What would you say are your favorite?
I mean, I still really love photography. I mean, that's where I started in the arts, and I had that always as a hobby. So really, you know, a favorite for sure. But I guess more recently, these ones where I'm combining reclaimed wood and computer boards and cutting, you know, them into landscapes. So, you know, the computer boards are trees and mountains and moons or suns or whatever. And yeah, combining those with recycled materials, like, and core sample boxes, and yeah, all sorts of things. Yeah. So that's probably, I mean, that's what I want to work on right now. So yeah.
How does your work relate to the world at large, and where would our listeners come into contact with your work?
Huh. Good question. So how does it relate to the world at large? So my art practice tends to be issue-based work. So I like to take an issue and figure out a way to address that issue in my work. And so I guess that's how it relates to the world at large. So, for example, the reason why I combine computer boards and organic things is because I think that we aren't paying enough attention to the negative aspects of technology. Yes, we've made our tasks more simple, but it hasn't simplified our lives because our expectations have increased, even more than technology seems to be able to enable us to complete tasks. And so I think that, yeah, we're just not really paying enough attention. I had an exhibit here in Whitehorse in 2014 called Insidious, and it was just looking at the insidious nature of technology. And so to try to reach people on an emotional level, the combination of organic things, really organic things, with computer boards kind of speaks. That's my attempt at speaking to that, to people on that emotional level. And some other things were caribou antler. I made a necklace of caribou antler with computer boards. So just that combination of, it's kind of an unusual juxtaposition of organic things and technology. And so I guess that's how I relate to the world at large. My work tends to do that. Yeah. Not always, because sometimes I just want to play and do creative things. But yeah.
And where could people come into contact with your work?
Well, it depends on where I'm having an exhibit. So I have one at Yukon Artists at Work that opens tomorrow. And so my work is always actually in Yukon Artists at Work and Arts Underground in Whitehorse. I also have an exhibit at the Arts Center next year. And online, I guess. So, yeah, and the Arts Center one, the idea is that I hope that it will travel. So it's, yeah. I have a website that, yeah, people can see what's been happening and what's planned. So, yeah, that's probably the best place to go.
What's your website?
Oh, yes. It's www.leslieleong.com.
Oh, yeah. Perfect.
Yeah. So, yeah, easy, right? Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, and I would encourage everyone to check it out. It's very beautiful. So you used to belong to the Division for the Advancement of Women in Engineering and Geosciences at Engineers and Geoscientists BC. What were some of your key moments from that time?
Wow. So it was a new division at the time when we were involved. Actually, we were part of the organizing committee. A friend of mine, Karen Savage, she was heavily involved. And one of the things we did was we held this conference that was looking at bridges and barriers to women in engineering in Vancouver. And we had a speaker there. She was amazing because she had insights that we kind of could feel sometimes, but we didn't really know. You don't really know sometimes whether you're, you know, things that occur, you're wondering, is that just the way things are, or is it because I'm female, or what is going on? So this conference really brought things out, especially when this female engineer spoke, because she claimed that she would never have gotten to the position that she was in as a woman. She was actually a man before. So that was like, wow. Yeah. And for her to share that, like, that was incredible. Yeah. Like, she really, gives me shivers even just thinking about it now. Yeah. She got to her position as a man. Yeah. And then experienced things quite differently as a woman. So you can't even, you know, no one can even argue that, oh, well, you know, it's because you don't know the other side. Well, she knew both sides.
Yeah. Yeah. That's such an amazing opportunity to hear that individual speak. And I think that's a really interesting opportunity for research and obviously a really limited pool, but
totally.
I've been reading that anecdotally,